its head. All right, City Council will come back. So can you call the roll?
Fish. Saltzman.
Here.
Leonard. Fritz.
Here.
Adams.
Here. A quorum is present. We will proceed with the hearings, at least taking testimony. It'll take more people here to vote on things. But can you please read the title for time-certain emergency ordinance, item number 617?
Authorize grant agreements and intergovernmental agreements with 15 nonprofit and public entities related to the Community Watershed Stewardship Program.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. The Bureau of Environmental Services developed the Community Watershed Stewardship Program in 1995 to encourage community projects that protect and enhance our watersheds. It's not enough, however, to ask only about the environmental benefit. Now we are also asking about the social benefit, particularly to underserved communities. 2 years ago, I directed the Bureau of Environmental Services to include equity considerations into the program, and I'm very pleased by the progress, which you'll see shortly. So here to tell us more are Jennifer Devlin of the Bureau, Bridger Weinman, who is with the Bureau, but he's a PSU graduate student, and Garrett Phillips, also with the Bureau and also a PSU graduate student. I think they're both in the Masters of Urban Regional Planning. Right. So come on up.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and Commissioner Saltzman and Commissioner Fish, Fritz, wherever you are.
She's behind
you. Oh, good. Okay, good. I know you know all about this, too, so that's great. My name is Jennifer Devlin. I'm staff with the Bureau of Environmental Services. And next to me is Garrett Phillips. He's our incoming MERP student. And Bridger Weinman, who is completing a two-year stint as our grants coordinator. So, as you know, CWSP is a partnership between the City of Portland, Environmental Services, and PSU and the community. It is large and broad, as you can imagine there. Together, we involve community members and students in watershed improvement projects. We offer grants, which you're going to hear about today, but we also offer technical assistance and other resources through our bureau and other bureaus and through the different programs at PSU to help community groups find the resources they need to make their watershed improvement dreams happen. So most of you are pretty familiar with our program, so I've just put up some of the types of things that we fund. But what I really wanted to talk to you a little bit about today before I turn it over to Garrett and Bridger is capacity building in the community. And I just want to do that by just telling you one tiny little story that I heard while I called one of our grantees this spring. We had an Oregonian reporter who wanted to interview a grantee for an article he was doing, and so I always have to call around and see who wants to talk to a reporter. And I talked to Pastor Linda at Colonial Heights Church over on Southeast 28th, and she was pretty chatty. Of course she wanted to talk to the reporter about her rain garden project. But what she really wanted to talk to me about is how that project happened and how her grant even got written in the first place. As a pastor at a Christian church, the busiest time of the year for her is Easter, and that happened to coincide with when our grants were due the year before. And so she looked at her project, and she looked at our grants, and she said, "There's no way. I can't do this. This is my busiest season. I'm not going to be able to do it." So she turns to her intern, who was finishing like her one-year mission at her church, and she said, "Is there any way you could possibly figure out how to write this grant?" And this young person working for her said, "Well, yes, of course. 10 years ago, the church where I grew up got a community watershed stewardship grant, and we built a bioswale, and we restored a stream up at St. Andrew's Church. And, of course, I can write that grant." And so, of course, the end of the story is the student wrote the grant, and Colonial Heights got that. And it's that kind of capacity building that you start seeing in the community. And we don't really have a way to track that and report that to you. But what we really want to do with our equity work is we want to take some of that capacity that's been built in the community and really move that around and really encourage the people who have had some experience or know what they're doing to move that to other neighborhoods and other types of groups and include other types of groups. And that's really the work that we're going to be covering with you today. So the third slide just has our numbers. And, you know, it's impressive, but it's been 15 years. These are the types of outcomes we're getting. I want to just say that when people write a grant to us, we don't have a matching requirement. We like to see match because it shows that there's partnerships there. But our experience is that most community members underestimate the assets that they really bring to the table anyway. And so you can see that our match numbers are really high. It's more than 3-to-1 for our dollars spent matched by the community. And it just really, I think, underscores how much the community brings to the projects that they do. So I am going to turn it over to, who's next? Garrett. Thank you.
It's actually me. I'm Bridger Weinman.
Bridger.
And so the slide that you see here is a map of all of the projects that QISP has funded over the last 15 years, ending with the projects that are just finishing up right now. And some of those different types of projects that have been developed over the years, apart from sort of your bread and butter restoration work, have capitalized on the innovation of Portlanders and kind of the community spirit of doing new and innovative things. And that's let us partner with groups that are doing things in the neighborhoods where there aren't open water bodies necessarily accessible or natural areas. So they're doing things like building community gardens, removing pavement, building stormwater features and eco roofs. And that's a really great opportunity for this program to access new communities that has been developed over the last 15 years. But as you look at the map, you can see that there are some parts of Portland that we really haven't forged very many partnerships with, especially East Portland and east of 205. And just visually, when you see the geographic distribution, you can see that that's the case. So for us, that's an opportunity and a challenge. How do we reach these people that aren't engaged with stewardship through our program? And how can we have the resources that are available and the partnerships we can help develop accessible to them as well? So there's lots of different ways we can look at equity. We often in this program and at BES look at the city through the lens of watersheds. So we try to be deliberate about granting money to all of Portland's watersheds. We look at the neighborhoods that have projects in them and the ones that don't, and that's a good way for us to seek out leaders in those areas and try to plant the seed for future stewardship projects. And then we can use resources at PSU to do analytical exercises. This one, for example, we looked at access to open space and historic QISP grant sites and then created these targeted areas where there was a lack of access to both of those where we could apply extra energy and outreach efforts. So all this has been developing, but really a turning point was in 2009 and 10 when the program started working directly with Commissioner Saltzman's office to develop actions for equity. And this works in two different ways. We're asking the applicants to start describing how their projects serve underserved communities. And then on the other end is we evaluate the proposals that come in from the community. We're having the grant selection committee incorporate equity measures into the selection process. So this has been going on now for a couple years, and we want to talk about how that's developed and what the next steps are. So these are the projects that you approved last year, and the ones that are highlighted, there's 15 of them. The ones highlighted in blue were proposals where the applicant called out specifically how their project served underserved communities. That's about a third of the projects. And there's a couple that we'd like to highlight for you. This is the Urco Gilbert Park Sun School. So the Gilbert Park School is an elementary school in outer southeast Portland, and the Sun School coordinator there wrote a grant to QISP, and part of it was she took the kids in the Sun program with the help of BES educators out to natural areas and you can see the kids there learning about the plants and bugs and stuff of like a native ecosystem. They learned about why that's important and really engaging and fun for the kids. But then they took what they learned and applied it at their own school, a place that they had some ownership over at Gilbert Park. And they created a naturescaped area right at the front of the school by the sign where the parents drive in to pick up the kids. They took out the sod and went to the native plant nursery, picked out some cool native plants that went together well and planted them there with little interpretive signs. And now they're helping those plants grow and making sure they get well established. And the really cool thing is, subsequently, they're pretty much done with this part of the project. They took the momentum they gained from this and applied for a larger grant from East Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District. And now they're doing a bigger project at a different part of the school grounds to remove invasives and plant native plants. So that's a really cool thing, and these kids are going to take what they learned off to the next stages of their education. This is another really cool project in East Portland. It's in the Hazelwood neighborhood on 153rd and Burnside. It's the Glenfair Evangelical Church Community Garden. So this is an area of town that is relatively low income. It's been changing relatively rapidly over the last 10 years, new folks moving to the neighborhood. Lots of them live in apartment buildings along the transit corridor. So this church was wondering how they can reorient themselves to serve the community as it changes. And they had this great resource of a big lawn right by the MAX station there. So some leaders there convinced the congregation that it would be cool to make a community garden with that resource. And they dug up the sod and they created a organic community garden. It's pretty much finished now. They started gardening last year. This year it's really, they're going all out. Folks in the surrounding community are invited to have a plot there. They're having classes on organic gardening. They're putting up signs that will advertise it so people feel welcome to come and learn about organic gardening and to grow food there, whether on a plot or in a community plot that people share. So it's a really cool example of how the values of community, even on that sort of the outer edges of Portland, can line up to involve people in stewardship activities that might not ordinarily have an opportunity to. So those are some of the projects from last year that are finishing up. Now Garrett's going to talk about our outreach efforts and kind of where we're headed in the future.
Thanks. My name is Garrett Phillips, and I work with Bridger and Jennifer in the Community Watershed Stewardship Program. In fall 2010, we redoubled our equity efforts again under the leadership and encouragement of Commissioner Saltzman's office. We wanted to understand why some areas of Portland were home to fewer CWSP grantees and home to fewer applications than other areas of Portland. So we started by meeting with neighborhood coalition leaders and leaders from one of the watershed councils to understand that question and also to understand how some of the organizations that are already active in those areas, how their work might dovetail with watershed stewardship. So building on those conversations, we decided to target our outreach, our promotions, and our project planning assistance to East Portland and the Columbia Slough watershed. You might have seen on the map that East Portland has received relatively few grants in the past. In the past few years, the Columbia Slough watershed has received relatively few grants. So we also started a partnership with the Office of Human Relations. We wanted to understand how watershed stewardship can serve the needs of underserved communities throughout Portland. So we had a series of meetings with staff from the Office of Human Relations, and a staff person from that office also sat on our selection committee this year. They provided us with advice in selecting grantees, and they also are giving us feedback on the overall selection process for the future. So this year, some preliminary results from our selection process are that increasingly applicants are responding to the prompts in our application that encourage them to consider equity, and they're also responding to the advice that we give them on that front. Increasingly, grantees are also new to the Community Watershed Stewardship Program. The selection committee is also increasingly responding to this equity agenda, and they're selecting more grantees that have an equity component in their project. So if you look at this list of this year's grantees that we're putting before you, only one of them did not even try to identify some sort of equity component in their project. We're finding that there's some pretty big disparities in the meaningfulness of equity that is presented in the proposals. You can think about an underserved group passively benefiting from some sort of physical improvement on the one hand, and you can also think about an underserved group or community being a critical project planning and implementation partner on the other. So that's something we need to address in the coming year.
That's interesting that that one that is called out was looking at freshwater mussels, because at the Johnson Creek Watershed Council annual celebration, they reported on a partnership with some underserved schools, particularly Marshall and Alpha, studying freshwater mussels. So there's probably a connection to be made even in that one, even though they didn't call it out in their grant application.
Yes, yes. So I think next slide, please. So this is a map of the current grantees in red dots. You're seeing there that we're making some progress in extending our grants into East Portland, and we got some more back into the Columbia SLU this year. Five in the SLU, six east of Mount Tabor, and four east of I-205. It also shows that there's still some pretty big geographic disparities in the applications that we receive, which are the blue dots. They're primarily still in the areas that we've served traditionally. And so not surprisingly, there's still large gaps in where our funding is going to. Next slide. I'm going to tell you about a couple of this year's upcoming grantees. Our Happy Block is an informal group of neighbors that's going to be revitalizing a property near Southeast Woodstock and 82nd Avenue. They're going to be using QISP funds to manage over 300,000 gallons of stormwater annually through new stormwater management facilities. And some complementary funding sources are going to be taking care of a host of other revitalization efforts on the property to solve some crime issues that have been plaguing them there. Xerxes Society, you might notice, is the only only grantee that didn't call out an equity component. They're going to be leading a series of volunteer events to survey mussels in Portland streams, and hopefully the data that they collect can inform watershed councils and city staff's restoration efforts. With this grantee is a good example of the type of work that we're increasingly getting into, which is taking the grantees who we select and really trying to find good partners for them in underserved communities and ways that we can sort of match them up and serve multiple goals at once. So going forward, we're going to continue addressing geographic inequities by targeting our outreach, our promotions, the project planning assistance that we offer to underserved areas. And we're also going to put extra effort into making sure that the grantees in underserved areas have extremely successful projects that can serve as models to their neighbors. We're going to improve the selection process, providing a little bit more guidance on the types of equity partnerships that we're looking for. And part of that means that we have to develop some clearer criteria also. So that's something that we're going to work on with our advisor from the Office of Human Relations. And also we're going to continue trying to develop partnerships to serve multiple goals, to serve the needs of underserved communities throughout Portland while serving watershed health goals. Typically that means going out and trying to understand the groups that are already active in those areas, finding ways that their work can be directed towards watershed health improvement, and then connecting them with veteran watershed stewardship groups. And finally, we're going to continue looking for ways to help those groups get involved in watershed stewardship, whether or not it's with our grant program, because there are other valuable funding sources through Metro and the East Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District. So those are the end of my remarks. I think Jennifer has a few comments before we're done.
Thank you.
Well, I want to again thank Commissioner Saltzman for working with us on this, and just to say that it's been really wonderful to have Amy True's support and feedback and sort of ongoing, you know, support there to keep this work moving. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your great work.
Thank you. Do you have any questions, or?
I just have a few. The total amount you're asking us to authorize is $95,000.
$95,500. Yeah.
And how much does that leverage in other public or private resources?
We have not done that analysis.
You know, this is the second year you've done a community garden, and I'm struck, I think it's the second year you've identified a church. We have about 2,000 people on our community garden waiting list, and we have parks throughout the city that are trying to, community groups throughout the city trying to get, how do you, what filter do you use to determine where you invest on the garden programs?
We received garden requests from all of our watersheds this year, and there's no special category or anything. They are ranked with the other projects that come in. We do look at ones that might be serving people who are maybe underserved by the traditional plots or the partnership brings really unusual partners to our program. For example, we funded one that was written by ERCO and the Loaves and Fishes program out at the East Portland Community Center. And the group that they want to serve are people from Africa House. And they don't necessarily want to have traditional garden plots. It's unusual in a couple of ways. One is that it's really the community's garden, and people come there and grow food, and you know, there's not, you know, you don't just get your plot kind of thing. And the other thing is that the beds are raised to the height where senior citizens in those groups can garden there. So I think we're looking for something that's different, maybe that's innovative, maybe is in parts of Portland that we haven't funded, something that ranks high, projects that identify how a community garden does help the watershed. So if they're committed to meaningful education pieces on organics and not using pesticides and fertilizers, if they're committed, some of them bring in native plants into their garden in some way and for some reason, perhaps like a pollinator garden would raise that up a little bit more. So there's really are a lot of variables, and I'm sorry if it doesn't maybe feel like I'm exactly answering your question, but
no, that's helpful. And there's just a tremendous need, and we have different programs funding something, and we have different criteria
sure.
that we express to the public about, you know, how you access the money. And I actually think it would be useful to try to align the programs and even give people the opportunity to pair dollars, so something from your pocket, something from another pocket. What's the maximum amount you can get under this program?
$10,000.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Others that wish to testify on this matter? All right. Can you please call the vote?
Appreciate the presentation and the discussion. Aye.
Houseman?
Well, I want to thank Jennifer. I want to thank Bridger and Garrett for their great work. And I also want to especially thank Amy True in my office for her efforts to really help work with BES to inject more of equity considerations into our grant process. I think as you all saw from the screen, it's paid dividends, whereas every grant, a third of the grants last year reflected equity considerations. All but one this year reflect equity considerations. So I think we're making good progress. And I want to thank the Bureau and, again, Amy True for my office. These grants are small, but they really do energize people to make sure they're taking care of our watersheds and our water resources. So please vote aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman and Dean Marriott, for your continued leadership of this program. And I particularly want to thank Associate Professor of Urban Studies and Planning, Barry Messer, who's the PSU Principal Investigator on this program, who helped initiate it all those years ago, along with Jerry Blake at PSU. He started the recycling program, which we authorized anew today in the consent agenda this morning. And our partnership with Portland State University and with these professors is immeasurably valuable. And as one of the recipients of the very first round of grants 15 years ago, I'm living proof that this can lead to more and more involvement in civic issues. As a result of the grant that I helped Markham Elementary School get, we founded the Tryon Creek Watershed Council, which for the second year now is getting a mentoring grant. And I appreciate the focus this year not only on equity. It's really exciting to hear issue after issue coming to council talking about equity before we've even established our office, which is encouraging and shows that people all over Portland and certainly throughout the city bureaus understand the importance of equity and that we need to focus diligently on it. It is very important to look at the mentoring aspects and the geographic distribution. All the things you just called out are absolutely spectacular, and I appreciate your diligence. And one of my staff, Carrie Turcon, is going to be entering the Masters in Urban Planning program this fall, so we hope that she'll be involved in this from the other side also. And I thank her for her work within our office. And Amin Wahab, who's here from the Tryon Creek Watershed Stewardship Program, again, much appreciated, and good work all around. Aye.
Adams.
Thank you. Aye. So approved. That gets us to the holdover from this morning, is that right?
Yes.
Item number, can you please read the...
Item 611, grant revocable permit to Periera Creperie on behalf of Ankeny Street businesses to close Southwest Ankeny Street between Southwest 2nd Avenue and Southwest 3rd Avenue from 7 a.m. June 20, 2011 until 11 a.m. November 1, 2011.
I'd ask, Mr. President, if you could help facilitate since I was...
Yes. So in your absence this morning, we had discussions surrounding this issue. There was some interest expressed in possibly having some of the businesses dedicate some of the space in the street that they would use for their tables for public seating. In discussing that, that effort with Ben Walters, the city attorney, this morning at the end of council, that's problematic on a number of levels. It would require amending other ordinances besides this to do it appropriately. So in my discussions with Ben, the conclusion I reached, speaking for myself, is that and I think the business owners themselves discussed it and felt like, for a variety of reasons, it was an unfair request of them. And I have to say that I have to agree. We have sidewalk cafes throughout downtown Portland. What makes this unique is this particular sidewalk doesn't have the ability to have chairs and tables on it without obstructing egress. And so what they're asking to do is actually place these in the street where people aren't allowed to sit or lie anyway. It's for vehicular traffic. So we're really allowing the sidewalk to continue to be used as it is under current ordinance, and then simply vacating the street for a period of time through October 21st, I believe, is the date.
31st.
Is that right?
31st.
October 31st, so that we can have this trial period for what I want to make clear is locally owned businesses, one of which has been in that location over 100 years, Dan and Louie's Oyster Bar, Voodoo Donuts, and other locally owned businesses, many of whom are, by the way, advocates in the homeless community and do great work in the homeless community. So I hate to see this get pitted as something about them versus the homeless community, because it is anything but that. To ask of them something in this ordinance that we have asked of no other restaurant who has applied for a sidewalk permit, I think would be unfair. They think it would be unfair, and our city attorney think it's just really unworkable. So I would ask that we just vote on it as is.
Mayor, I'm prepared to vote on the ordinance.
I'd like to have some discussion. There is a section of the street. We have never before, to my knowledge, closed an entire street for 6 months to allow for private uses.
4 months.
4 months. And there is a section that in the diagram that I was provided, there's a section in the closed area of street that is not shown as fenced off for the particular adjacent business owners, and which would be suitable for having a bench or two so that people who currently can use that street as the public would be continuing to be able to use that part of the street.
I think what after speaking with the businesses, the ones that were represented here after the meeting this morning, they're not prepared to speak on behalf of all of the businesses. And what they are most comfortable with is pulling the emergency clause and having this be the first reading and coming back next week for a second reading. It was just that there are no, I don't have all the businesses to discuss that particular plan.
Thank you. Well, there were two businesses here this morning that were interested in being able to find a solution. They thought the request made by Sisters was reasonable. So if I might offer an alternative suggestion, if we pull the emergency clause, it wouldn't go into effect till 30 days after next week. If we were to just hold it over as an emergency ordinance till next week so that you would have time to contact the businesses and see if we could come to some agreement, then we could vote on it next week and it would go into effect immediately.
I think they're prepared for the 30-day.
Well, but we need to clarify a point. Aside from whether or not it is a fact that the business would or would not agree to some language to accommodate their particular use under the provisions of this ordinance, it's problematic from the city attorney's office point of view because it raises some other issues. Now, if there is some way we can adopt this as is, and then within the boundaries of what this ordinance allows, there is some extra space that doesn't impinge on what the businesses are using, I'm sure we will try to accommodate public use wherever possible. But to add that as a condition on this, aside from what the property owners may or may not agree, really sets an unfair set of conditions on a group of business owners that we don't ask of other business owners, and I'm concerned about that as well. Equity is a two-way street. I mean, it has to work for everybody, and everybody has to feel comfortable with it for it to be equitable. And my sense in talking to Ben Walters this morning was this creates a number of problems, notwithstanding what the business owners may or may not agree to.
It's unfortunate that as the person who asked for it this morning that my office and I were not consulted over the lunch break so that we could have had this discussion and come to some agreement ahead of time. But if that's what they want to do is pull the emergency clause and vote on it.
I'm not asking for that to happen, so I'm asking that we proceed with the vote and then we'll go from there.
I'm not going to vote for it as is.
So let's just go from there.
All right, unless there's additional council discussion, Sue, would you please call the vote?
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
I think it's really unfortunate that we had a creative solution that came up this morning that with some time and some discussion, respectful discussion, I think we could come to a solution that would work for everybody. I hope that still can happen over the course of next week. If we could come to some agreement, we could then put the emergency clause back on next week. No.
Adams.
Aye.
Before you hit your gavel, Mayor Adams, I changed my vote from aye to no for the purposes of reconsideration.
So noted. Motion fails.
So I'd move to reconsider the vote by which item 611 failed.
Motion to reconsider, which requires a majority vote to reconsider, correct?
Isn't it? Don't you have to be in the majority to reconsider?
I am in the majority because I changed my vote to no.
Yeah. And then do we have to vote on the reconsideration or yes. Just is automatic?
So yes. What are we voting on?
You're voting on to reconsider the measure.
So we're voting on to reconsider the measure. Sue, would you please call the vote?
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I have no clue what we're doing here.
We're voting to whether or not to have another discussion, bringing it back from the dead, essentially, to bring it back to the table for further consideration.
And does a simple majority serve to do that?
Yes.
And I'll vote no, just to be sure.
Adams?
Aye. Is that a reconsideration?
Mayor Adams, I'd move to remove the emergency clause from item 611.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to remove the emergency clause, which takes a majority vote. Sue, would you please call the vote on removing the emergency clause?
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
No.
Adams.
Aye.
Moves
to a second reading next week. That was it, right? That was the only holdover? All right. We are in recess till tomorrow.
Oh.
Yeah.
June?
That's tomorrow. The budget's tomorrow?
The